morning. As we start, I have to just tell you, we're going to talk about differences between machine matzahs and how a person would pick one. But the only bad news is that I'm not going to mention names of different brands or different types of machine matzahs. We're going to talk about just in theory what are the right things, what are advantages and disadvantages, and you'll ask your own rabbi afterwards which brand is better for you. Okay. Yes, the price is definitely something. I'm not going to talk about that, but yes, there is a big difference in price. Okay. And the good news is that the way things stand at this point is that we haven't seen any machine matzahs that are not kosher. What we're talking about here is a matter of preferences of hidurim, which one is better than the other one, but not a question of kosher and pasul on chametz.
Is this for the seder? For like, what are you?
We're talking about in general.
This can be part of it.
We're talking about in general. A little bit about the seder also, but most of what we're talking about is just general for pesach
machine matzah. For the hidurim for machine matzah.
For the matzah itself, correct. Okay. Now you should know before, even though we're going to talk about a number of topics that have to do with the matzah, there's lots of things that everybody does reasonably the same, and that does reason very well. Okay, over the years, if this has developed, people have gotten really good at this. So, for example, everyone has to do Hafrosh Haskala. They have to take care of the Mayim Shalanu, and they have to make sure that near the oven it's not hot, and they have to make sure they don't have any kfulas, and it takes less than 18 minutes. So all these types of things that have people to watch for, and by and large, there isn't such a difference between them. In other words, they're all doing that reasonably well. But of course, if it'll make you feel better, I'll tell you, there are, each one of these things has horror stories to it, mistakes that people found out, but I'll tell you them for a second, but I'm mentioning only to tell you that in these things, what we're going to talk about is where there are differences between them. There are lots of other things that go into making a matzah well, and in those people are reasonably successful. I'm just going to give you some examples of where even these things can go wrong. It's very important in a matzah bakery that there's no heat in the area where they do the kneading of the dough. Because if there's heat where you need the dough can become chametz in less than 18 minutes. Okay, so it's important that no heat comes from the oven into the place where you do the kneading of the dough. Okay, that's every matzah bakery gets care of that, hand or machine matzah, everyone's taking care of that. In one matzah bakery, they found out decades after they built this bakery, that the oven itself, let's say that this whole table was the oven, the burners of the oven only started from this part. For the first 5 feet of the oven, the burner, there were no burners in that part. Which is to say, listen to what's going on over here. They were protecting to make sure the heat from the oven didn't escape out of the oven to the area where they did the kneading. But the matzah sat for the first couple of, let's say, 10 seconds or 30 seconds in the oven. It was sitting in a warm area that was very, very hot, but wasn't hot enough for baking yet. Okay, so they made a mistake in the way they built it. The point is, you have to keep it cold until you're ready to bake, and it goes into a place that's ready for baking. And here, what they did is, they didn't realize it, but the beginning of the oven was just like a preheater. Well, preheater is the worst thing for matzahs. Matzahs have to go right from cold right into the oven, and they messed up and hadn't realized it. Okay, it's quite an unusual thing. It was only discovered, and somebody who was really paying attention to it noticed that. Okay, there's one of the things is with.
When you put matzah, raw matzah, the dough that's flattened out, you put it in a warm place.
No. Okay.
You put it in a warm place. What is happening?
It starts to ferment. It starts to become chametz. So usually if you put dough on the table, it takes 18 minutes for it to become chametz. If you put it into a warm place, it's like putting it into a proofer. It happens faster. If you put it in a warm chamber...
Yeah, when you say it happens faster, are we talking about 3 seconds?
So we don't know what the shear is. So we avoid it because we don't know how quickly it happens if you put it into a warm area. So when you put it into this oven, if that part of the oven was 100 degrees, 120 degrees, 150 degrees, all of a sudden it's warm, but it's not yet a baking temperature, and you did the wrong thing. Another thing is, you're not allowed to have windows in a place where you bake matzahs, because the sunlight comes in, and the sunlight can warm up the dough, and it can cause it to become chametz faster. Okay? So, a matzah bakery doesn't have windows to it. If you build, there was one where they had, all the windows were boarded up, until the employees wanted some more air. So the employees ripped off the boards and they made themselves eerie, okay? So you have to be paying attention. All matzah bakeries don't have windows in them, but this one, which they had boarded up, only when the employees, when nobody was looking, took it off. So someone has to be alert. I'm mentioning these things in general, people do this right, but things can go wrong.
But it could start in the winter and it's very cold. It could turn on the heat.
they could turn on the heat. That would also. But most matzah bakeries don't need heat. It's warm enough because it's a warm. Yes, but you're right. If you're putting on heat, you have to be watching weather also. That's correct.
Yeah, a lot of heat. You could put 68.
I don't understand. In a warm climate, when it's 89 degrees, you can't bake matzahs. You can. But it's sunlight. Is this? Not sunlight, but not any little. Somebody breathes a little bit. No,
I'm just.
There's another place that's Mayim Shalom was being filled up too late. Okay, usually everybody gets Mayim Shalom right. These people, for whatever reason, they were filling up the Mayim Shalom a little bit too late. You have to put the water away. Basically, everybody gets Mayim Shalom right.
From the end to the night?
Yeah, they didn't start filling up. Not that day. A little too late. After tzitz. It was being filled after tzitz. Other people have dough that splatters into places or gets caught on pipe. Okay, I'm just saying, these are things that, by and large, everyone's doing it right. Not to say that you should just say, oh, no matter. There's nothing to think about. There's lots of effort goes into making it right. But what we're going to talk about are things that there is a difference. That Lamaisa, people are not doing exactly the same. Okay, the first two things we're going to talk about, they're sort of related, and that these two things are not so specific, they're not specific to matzah at all. And the first is, there's a din, that it's from a pasuk, that a person's supposed to buy something if they have a choice to buy from a yid or from a goy. There's a din, you're supposed to buy from a yid. If you have a choice between two choices, you buy one buy a yid or a goy, you should. So the Shaar Tzion brings, in Hilchos Esrik, in Hilchos Lulav, he brings, that if you have a choice to buy your Esrik from a yid or from a goy, if it's an example of this, then you should buy it from a yid. Okay? So, that is to say, you would be surprised to know that there are matzah bakeries that are owned by goyim. Okay? And the matzah bakery that has a very small Jewish ownership to it.
You call 117?
There are matzah bakeries that are not owned by yid. So if a person had a choice, this is not a matzah specific thing, but a person had a choice to buy matzah from a yid or from a goy, literally, that's what it is, then he should buy preferably from the yid. Whether that applies to buying it from someone who is not Shemir Shabbos, I don't know if that's true or not, but there's all of those. There's one owned by some people, one owned by people who are not Shemir Shabbos, and one that owned basically by God.
And price plays a role?
Of course, price plays a role in this, as with other foods. But I mean, it's something, a factor, just to realize, when you buy any food, it's just not a matzah specifically. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, related to that is that matzah is a very sensitive food to make. It's not like any other food kosher. It's very sensitive. You have to do it just so. And it's important that the people who are running the factory be very dedicated to not just doing it okay, but to being willing to make all kinds of efforts to do it really perfectly. Okay? And a lot of effort goes into making matzahs correctly. And they have to be willing to go along with, I don't want to use the word mishigasim, but all kinds of things that come up of ways to make it better than it is. Okay? Those are things that are not really so matzah specific. Okay? As you probably know, till 150 years ago, everybody ate hand matzah, because that's all there was. Then came along people who started making machines, and there were two big shilas that came up at that time, that using machine matzahs. The first was whether the machines are clean enough, whether you can get all the dough out of it, and you can make sure it's clean, there's no dough that sits for more than 18 minutes. And the second shilas was whether they're lishma, whether it can be lishma if a person makes it by machine. So before we get into the details, I want to just tell you that shaila has become very different. Those two shailas have changed over time. And that is, a modern machine is much easier to clean. Modern machines are built in ways that make it much easier to clean. The shaila dough being left over is much simpler. It's much less of a shaila. But the other side is, the lishma shaila has become more complicated. Because it used to be that when it was a machine matzah, it was a machine matzah, but there was lots and lots of human involvement in making that machine matzah. There were a lot of people carrying dough from here to there and cranking things and things like that. And nowadays, it's not everybody, but there's a difference between places that some are more or less automated as to how much human involvement there is. From the extreme of no human involvement to other ones where there's a lot of people being involved, and that's going to play into what we're going to talk about.
Can you explain what the first machine matzah was? It was without electricity.
Is that true?
That's what I said.
Was it just someone just cranking the... Okay, couldn't think.
It was the 1850s or something.
Right, so it was before, there was just... Right, people were just cranking. Even that, there was shaila that actually be considered lishma.
Machine.
To us, we would be surprised to think that they didn't have shaila that's lishma, right? When the guy's cranking the thing, it's like the guy's rolling the matzah, he's saying, no, that's, he's not doing it by hand. Right? We would think, to us, it doesn't even sound like a shaila.
I'm almost sure. But
if they thought that was a shaila, what would they have thought? To nowadays, right, when nobody does anything, they push the button in the morning, and that's it. It's finished.
If Shlomo Kluger would blow up.
He would not, right. Okay. The next thing to this. an important thing in making matzah, as I just said to you, is making sure that it's clean, that you don't have residue left over. And in this, there's quite a range in how you make your matzah. Again, I'm gonna, as I said at the beginning, everybody's getting it clean. Everybody, anything that would possibly left is, of course, possible in tiny amounts, but there's a range in how good a person can get something clean. Everybody has all kinds of tools. There are all kinds of tools nowadays for cleaning things. There's scrubbers, there's ear blowers, there's schmatas, there's machinery that comes... schmatas is always had. There's machines that come apart...
Better schmatas.
Actually, they really are. One person who runs a matzvik, he showed me his collection of scrubbers and schmatas and things like that, and it has all types. And the effort goes into making sure you get it right. In one place, just as a contrast of two different places, in one place, there's a mashgiach who's standing at his spot, standing there with not very much to do. His job is to watch, and he has a little bit of work that he has to do. But while he's standing there, there's a shoe that's getting dusted with flour and water. Okay? Well, that mashgiach, but a place where the dough is passing by, and the mashgiach is standing there, and he's not taking advantage of the fact that he's a mashgiach, he's standing there. Given the right tool, he would keep it clean. He wouldn't have a dusting of flour and water being in that spot. Okay, so that's one extreme. The other.
Did you say something?
In another example, we have a place where every 15 minutes, the alarm goes off. So the mashgiach, aside from their general cleanliness, they're getting an alarm every, 13, 15 minutes. It's going off to tell them, now go ahead and do a full cleanup. We'll talk about what that means in a second, but do your cleanup now. That is to say, his machinery is running, but not only is he doing his general keeping an eye on things, but he gets a reminder every less than 18 minutes to say, go around and do your moving around from place to place to do cleaning. So in cleaning, you could do more or less, or take better or less advantage. More or less advantage of your ability to do that. And the machinery can be designed differently. Okay, the more modern machines have things that slide out. The parts that need to be cleaned, you don't have to clean them with all the pieces on top of each other. It's not built everything in one squished area that has to be cleaned, but everything opens up and pulls apart, and you can get into things, you can get under things. One place said, you know what we're going to do? Instead of putting a belt, belts is a good place for dough to get caught on. There's no belt. Okay, the dough itself, it acts sort of like a belt. It gets pulled from roll to roll with no belt underneath it. Okay, so there's no belt that can get dough on it because there ain't no belt in this place. It just moves on from place to place. Okay, that's
pulls on its own.
It gets, once it's fed through, it's pulling itself. I mean, the dough is being pulled. There's a tiny bit of a support in between, but basically it's floating on air. It's being pulled from place to place without something in it. Okay, so that's someone who's taking advantage of that. Instead of saying, no, I'm going to put a belt in there. The opposite is, there are belts that are made with, when you do what's called the reveling, and making the holes in it. So the way you make holes is that the top roller has these spikes coming out of it to make the holes in it. Okay, well, when you do that, the roller that's underneath it is going to get banged up by the spikes all the time. Right, the roller that's underneath it, which is flat, is getting hit by the spikes all the time. So that roller that's underneath it that gets hit by the spikes, in one place what they did is they made that roller with indentations in it. So the spikes wouldn't hit anything. Okay, that wasn't a smart choice, because that means is you're building in a place for the dough to sit into. That's building in a place for the dough to get stuck into. Now they built it in because, well, the spikes are hitting it. Well, that wasn't so smart to do that. If you make it smooth, which is what would probably be better, then you have to change it because it gets beaten up because the thing is hitting it. So you have to think about how you're building it. A lot of people use Teflon-coated items to keep them smoother, but that the Teflon wears away. So what's good at the beginning, which is that you have Teflon because things fall off of it with time, gets worn away and has to be replaced. And all this, what you're hearing from me, is having doubles of your equipment is very helpful. And that differentiates also places from each other, is that the more doubles that you have means you could take piece A out and put B in its place in order to resurface it. You have to resurface it. One for washing, but one for resurfacing. Okay. Now, there's a very big divide, even I told you, I won't say names of places, there's a very big divide between Eretz Yisrael and America in a certain issue. And that is, when you're making a machine matzah, do you stop the machines every 18 minutes or not? Okay? In America, they don't stop the machinery. The machinery runs for hours on end. And Eretz Yisrael, the general practice is they stop the machines every 18 minutes. and they do a cleanup every 18 minutes. Okay? So, to see
them... What's this for? For not stopping?
What's the justification for not stopping? Let's say first the other side. The obvious reason why you want to stop what you're saying is you want to stop this because don't get stuck someplace. You want to get rid of it before it's just 18 minutes. The other side is machinery is fickle, and machinery takes time to get rolling. So every time you stop, not only did you lose 3 minutes while the guy's clean, then you have to get yourself restarted. So if it's partially production, maybe that has to do with the making matzahs also. If the machine doesn't start so well, then maybe the first bunch of matzahs coming out won't be as good either. Because kashrus-wise, as well. But the advantage in this case is surely to the ones who stop every 18 minutes. Okay? There's one justification for not stopping. Okay? One justification, which is, the din is that if a person does asik to matzah, and we're going to talk more about this in a minute, if you do asik to matzah, if you work with a matzah, the 18 minutes, there's no 18 minutes. If you keep on kneading the dough, you can go all day long, and it doesn't come hot. So, in the rollers, in the place where you're rolling out the dough, when you're rolling the dough thinner and thinner, those rollers is considered an asik of the matzah. So, if there's dough on those rollers, in that area, there's dough stuck in the place where it's having asik, you could go all day long. Stopping is not a good thing. In that place, if you stop, the dough that sits there starts to become hummus.
Okay. Since the roller goes around.
Yes.
When you're going around, that's not an asik.
So, if
it's an asik when the roller is pressing the dough.
Correct.
Now the roller is turning on the dough.
Correct.
Turning on it.
Yes, you're correct. So now, two things. If there'd be dough stuck, if dough would be stuck right in a certain spot, it would be having asik all the time. But not realistic. You're right. It's spinning around and around. So now there's a machlokes whether what happens if you're having an asik and you, we say asik, you can go all day long. Does asik stop the chimitz or does asik pause the chimitz? Okay, it's a machlokes. The Rama implies that it only pauses the chimitz. When I say pause, I mean it's like this. If you have a minute of asik and then 2 minutes of no asik, Now you do another minute of ASIC. Okay? When you stop that second ASIC, do you now have only 16 minutes left till your thing comes chametz, or you have 18 minutes left? Does the first 2 minutes that you did before the ASIC, does that say, that's gone, it's finished, we stopped that becoming chametz, or do we say we just paused it? So those 2 minutes happened so far, now we have a pause, and now we have another 16 minutes to go. If it pauses it, the way that Rama implies, that we're just pausing it, then what David said is right. As it spins around, big deal, it goes for, let's say it takes 2 seconds to spin around. Half of a second it's underneath there, and the other 1.5 seconds it's spinning around. So for 1.5 seconds it's no ASIC, ASIC, ASIC. So you're only pausing it, you keep building up your time. If you don't stop every 18 minutes, then you're messing yourself up. So the only advantage is, and again, only if the dough would be in a very specific spot where it has ASIC, then you would have an advantage to keeping the machinery running and never stopping it. But by and large, wherever the dough is going to get stuck is places that does not have ASIC. And mainly, you're really much better off stopping your machine every 18 minutes. You really are much better off stopping it off. It really ends up being a production issue, okay, which is...
Did you describe that when you do ASIC, you might be actually accelerating the time?
Okay, in 10 seconds. Okay, in 10 seconds. But really the advantage is to cleaning it every 18 minutes, it's a production reason. It ends up being a production reason to stop. Because, first of all, every 18 minutes, you're stopping for 2-3 minutes to clean. And you have to restart the machinery, it takes some time also. Okay. But there seemingly the advantages to the Israeli method rather than the American method. Okay, and that brings us to a related issue, which is what he was talking about, which is the din is that if you do ASIC, it stops the dough from becoming chametz. What happens if you, the Shulchan Aruch says, but if you do ASIC, then that has a disadvantage also. Okay, we say ASIC, we say it's a double-edged sword. Is that if you do ASIC, it stops chimitz, but when you do ASIC, it also heats up the dough, the friction heats up the dough, and that makes it become chametz faster. So when you're doing ASIC, you can hold the dough now all day long. But if you stop the ASIC, then it can become chametz right away, and Shulchan Aruch says. And therefore, once you start doing ASIC with the dough, once you start kneading the dough, then you shouldn't leave a few rega echad. You shouldn't even leave it for 1 second without doing ASIC to it. Because once you start heating it up, now you lost your 18 minutes. You don't know how much time you have. So the Mishnah Berurah says maybe that's a little bit of an exaggeration. Maybe a few rega echad is an exaggeration. I mean, I don't think there's any bakery that doesn't leave their dough for even 1 second. I mean, that really would not be easy. But he means don't leave it for any extended amount of time. And whatever that time is, you'll make up your share, whatever the time is. So now we have a question. We have a halakha question and a hashkafa question about what to do with that. Is that true? Why do I ask that? Go ahead.
you say that when you're kneading it, it warms it up.
Yes.
Is the warmth from the hands or from the kneading?
Very good question. Very good. We'll talk about that in a second. Very good. So the in this, I'm going to ask you if you can look over here. The making of a matzah, we're going to break up into three parts. Okay, they're on this chart, they're A, B, and C. Okay, and the three parts of making a matzah are kneading the dough. That's A. Then there's something called laminating or sheeting. That's putting it out, making from this big ball of dough into a long, flattened out piece of dough. And then C is to actually roll it out into a thinner matzah. Okay, when I say laminated, it's maybe an inch thick. They make it into this big pieces, and then C is making it, cheating it, and then after that goes into right into the oven. Okay, so what you see in front of you, you see 6 different places that make matzah. I believe one of these is made up. Okay, but the rest of them are real. Okay, are real places. Okay, this is real matzah bakeries, and this is how long it takes them to do each one of the steps, and it's drawn to scale as good as my computer can do. Okay, and on the side, you see how much is the total amount of time it takes to matzah, and the range goes from 4 minutes to almost 15 minutes.
Before it hits the oven?
Right. After C is when it hits into the oven. This is all the time it takes from when you mix the flour in the water. And this is from when you put in the flour water till it hits the end. So you'll see... You'll see that in this... Now, everyone gets it in 18 minutes. Yeah. That's, of course, 18 minutes. We get it in 18 minutes. But if you look at the difference, you'll see... that in some of the gray area is amount of time that it sits still between one step and the next. What do I mean it sits still? It means is, let's say you kneaded the dough, you did step A. Now the dough has to go to a place where you're going to laminate it. Okay, well, that takes time. Well, it could take a short amount of time, or it could take a long amount of time. So one side says, hey, it got in 18 minutes, what do you care for me? I don't care, I got in with 18 minutes. I even had some ASIC in the middle there, and I cut it down. But the other side is, I said to you, the Machaber says, once you did ASIC to it, then you're not allowed to leave it. I feel like I thought you shouldn't leave it at all. So now we have a halacha question, and then we have a hashkafa question. Let's do the halacha question first. Is that okay? Some of those gray areas are 5 minutes long. Okay? So is that what you mean?
This for 5 minutes?
Yeah. It goes onto a belt to move from one step to another step. It sits on a belt, and it just sits there for five... The word sitting is if you looked at it, you wouldn't notice the belt even moving. But even some of them that moves a little faster, but it goes from point A to point B and it takes X number of minutes. Those are, I think one of them is a fake, okay, but the rest of those are real. Those are real matzah bakers.
What? A is the fake problem? A is the kneading.
I'm not going to tell you, I'll tell you if which one is fake. Okay, they're not fake. No, he means sample A. Okay, so what would be the basis for being matzah? What's going on over here? So, you look and you say, I don't know which one I want to buy. So you say, what's going on here? What's this? So things like this. So first is like this. The Bir Halacha brings that it could be that only sitting after the kneading is what counts. Okay, when I said you shouldn't leave a filu rega echad, the Bir Halacha says that some say that only means after the original kneading. Okay, after step B. The kneading of the dough, that is not what heats up the dough. The mixing, the original kneading of the dough. It's when you work with it afterwards, that's the only thing that cuts down on the...
A is kneading,
yeah. B is it's laminating, sheeting. It's making it into a sheet. So only from B is what would count. So according to Bir Halacha, that would mean we wouldn't care about the shaded area between A and B. We'd only care about from B to C, okay? That helps some of the people. That doesn't help everybody over here, okay? Now, the Chazon Ish doesn't like that. Chazon Ish argues on the Bir Halacha about that. But the Chazon Ish says that what the Mechaber is saying, that you should do this thing, don't leave it after the it's only the Chathila, but it's only, but the Yevon doesn't make a difference. And the Chazon Ish says, don't worry about this, this is only a Chumul Chathila, but not for the Yevon. So if you want to buy matzahs for the Yevon, then that's fine. That would help you. And related to that is the Bir Halacha brings that this Shulchan Aruch comes from a rush, and many Rishonim argue on it. Okay, so many Rishonim argue on it. So far we haven't heard anything, a great answer. The best justification is what Ken was saying, what he was hinting at, to Marsham. But the Marsham says that when it says you shouldn't leave the dough a few regechot because it gets heated up, that's when a person works with his hands. And it's the heat from his hands that's transferring into the dough. But if a person works, what? The body heat, body temperature that's transferring into it, it's not the friction per se. And if you do it with a machine, it doesn't count. doing a heating something with a machine doesn't make it become hotter, and the haraya, if you look at it, doesn't get any hotter. If you actually look at the, if you feel the dough, then it doesn't, it's not hot. It's not at all warm. It doesn't show any signs of becoming warm. So the, that's a support for the Marsham says. The Marsham says that if you're doing it with a machine, it doesn't count. We only care about what you do with your hands. Okay. The other side is, as I said to you before, the Gemara says you can't, you don't have windows in a matzah bakery because the windows cause it to heat it. But let me say like this. I don't remember. I'm sorry. I take that back. I don't know if it's a Gemara. Okay, it's for sure. I don't remember if it's a Gemara. I don't remember. But the din is, a Yom HaMavunan is worse than a sunny day. A cloudy day is worse than a sunny day, because the heat of a cloudy day is worse than a sunny day. I'm saying this to you because me and you who would look at it would say, well, we would guess that a sunny day is smarter. Me and you would say is, who cares anything about windows? Feel the dough, either it's hot or it's not. I'm saying, so some of these things are not fully that we would judge it by our own. So what the Marsham is saying...
The rays of the sun, it's just like we get by Ma'ai Shalom, the cradle of the sun.
Right, but you would think... So Ma'ai Shalom is another example. We would think that you would put your finger into it, either it's hot or it's not hot. But that's not, we're not telling the thing. There's all kinds of dinim as to what we have to do. What I'm saying is we don't really use our own judgment. We're accepting that that's the rules, that it does it. Even though we don't get it, that the Ma'ai Shalom, I mean, you take the wood out of the sink, it seems just as cold now as in the morning. It doesn't seem to get any... whatever, gets to room temperature. So, you know, but... So, in Din, people who are doing this are being samuch on the Marsham. That's really what they're doing. They're saying it's a machine, and therefore that's what they're being samuch on. So, one is the halacha shayla, whether that's right or not. And the related is, I'm going to use the word hashkafa shayla, which is, if you would see, when you look at this, and you see, look at that space, okay, it sits for 3 minutes, or 4 minutes, or 5 minutes, you see, it doesn't... You don't get the feeling that that's what a matzah bakery supposed to look like. If you've been in a matzah bakery, you see how much we're trying to get the dough from place to place. And for example, some of the places that are less sophisticated don't use belts to move it from point A to point B. They use a person. They give the guy the dough and he runs to the next place. So you say, oh my gosh, look how backwards they are. But they have a big, in a bowl, he picks up the ball and he carries it to the next spot. So even though that seems more backwards, but it seems more, if I could use the word, appropriate. Okay, and they're trying to make it, they shouldn't leave enough people to get
them. Hand made matzahs in Yudel?
No, I'm talking about in a machine bakery.
Machine bakery, yeah. They have a person?
In some places, has a person who does that to do the transfer. I don't know if it's because they're less sophisticated or they're trying to do this, but in the end is, they're getting the stuff faster to move from place to place. The way sort of like, we get the feeling you're supposed to do that. Okay, and then there's a belt. Having a belt, you can have a fast belt or a slow belt. You know, it's your choice how you do it. So what it is like this. The following is conjecture, but if I'm going to summarize this part over here, which is like this. I don't know the science of it, but in reading things about this, it seems that what I call, there's a step called laminating, which is you sheet the dough out into a long sheet. And it seems that in the technology of it, when you make crackers, after you laminate, you're supposed to let the dough sit for a few minutes. Okay? I don't get the technology of it. I read articles about it. I don't really understand it. Maybe it I hope it's not because it's supposed to rise. It has something to do with it makes better crackers. It makes better crackers if you do that. I don't know what the reason is. So what is it like this? If there's now a decision when you're building a matzah bakery, you could either say it's like this. I'm trying to build a cracker company. This is my goal. I'm trying to build a cracker company. Well, these can't be regular crackers. These have to be special crackers because in order to make it kosher, it's got to be special rules. So we follow special rules to make it a kosher cracker or a Pesach cracker. If you come with that approach, then you say, well, when I build a cracker machine, after I laminate it, I let it sit. I have a really slow belt to let it sit to the next spot because that's how you make crackers. The rabbi says, we have to get it in by 18 minutes. Okay, so we make things a little faster, but my approach is I'm trying to do this way to make a cracker. And the other way to look at this is I wanted to make matzahs. Okay, if I want to make matzahs, then my goal is to get it right into the oven. Well, the only machines they have take a couple of minutes. Okay, I'll work with them to make like that. So it's a difference of approach. Am I trying to make crackers? Am I accommodating the rabbi? Or am I trying to make matzah and I'm accommodating the engineer? Okay, on to the next thing. Between machine matzahs, and that is a matzah being shmurah. I say shmurah for two purposes. Shmurah is, if you want to actually eat at the Seder, the people who will eat, lots of people eat a machine matzah at the Seder. But even if you don't eat at the Seder, there's good reason, which is not for now, to eat matzah shmurah the whole rest of Pesach. Some of them can hold them, some of them dinim, to eat it for the whole Pesach. And so the question is whether the there's a difference between one bakery and the next as to how shmurah that matzah is. If you look at one bakery and the next, one may be more shmurah than the next.
More
lishma. Yes. So if you're eating at the Seder...
You're not talking about from the field. You're talking about, or what are you talking
about? I didn't start yet. I'm just getting rolling. So if you can eat at the Seder, this is a much more of a crucial question. If you're not eating at the Seder, it's less important. But as you probably know, there are lots of people who go out, buy a box of square machine mats, and that's what they eat at the Seder. So the questions are, I'm going to go quick because we're running out of time, have to do with, firstly is, what happens if a person who's not Shomer Shabbos does work? Okay, this is not a question that's dafka for Mashi Matzah. It happens to apply, for whatever reasons, to Hand Matzah also. We know that if a guy makes a matzah, that's not considered Lashma. Even if he says he's doing Lashem Matzah's mitzvah, it's not considered Matzah Shmurah. And the reason is because we say that he has other things in mind. Even though he said he doesn't really mean it, he doesn't keep on going like that. And l'chatchila, we're not samech on gadol omer al gabo. If a yid is watching or Shomer Shabbos is watching, that's not good enough. The good news is that b'dieved that is okay. So b'dieved, if the mashgiach, who is a Shomer Shabbos, we assume the mashgiach is a gadol omer al gabo, then it would be kosher at least b'dieved. It would be considered lishmor b'dieved. I have to just tell you that the Mishnah Berurah says about making tzitzis, that when you say gadol omer al gabo, it means he has to be continually reminding the person and making him aware that what he's supposed to be doing is lishma. So the mashgiach, in order to make a good lam ragaba, would have to be more than just sit around. He would have to be more, you know, reminding them to do it, which is not exactly what happens. Okay. So as you know, there's a question whether how we should treat in general people who are not Shomer Shabbos. Are they able to do things like this, like make the lishma? And it may have to do with how not Shomer Shabbos the person is. Okay. There are some people who have more or less feeling towards Yiddishkeit. There's a Marsham also who says that a Yid who may not be Shomer Shabbos, but he has good feelings towards Yiddishkeit, and he does, you know, he has a certain type of a person, that person can make it lishma.
But it's also hard to proclaim someone not Shomer Shabbos because you need Bifar Hasya.
So it depends. So it depends on that kind of a child. Yeah, that child. What would we treat a person that's question of is he a Tinik Shnish, Baba Chayim, those kind of things? And but in this case, we're trying to make it a person who should say that his kavan is to do lishma. So these kind of questions float out. They're not only for Mashi Matzahs. Unfortunately, it's for Hand Matzahs also. These kind of questions.
Sure, all these Russians that we have, that's the bread and butter.
Right. Now, just to help you put into perspective, you're part of saying that people are doing it lishma. Part of it is when a person says he's doing lishay Matzahs mitzvah, he probably should know what he's talking about. So they try to put it up into different languages on the sign. But I once watched a person making egg matzahs, and every time they put it in the batter, they said the shei matzahs mitzvah. Okay, so of course egg matzahs are not kosher for the mitzvah. So you see how much they understood what they were doing when they said the shei matzahs mitzvah as they made egg matzahs. You know. But anyhow, so okay. Lastly,
there's different steps.
I forgot to say. You're right. I forgot to say.
This Rabbi Babad came in years ago before your time, and he was saying, "Which step do you need lishma?"
I didn't mean that. What Ken said, I don't know. What I think your meaning is how far back does it have to be lishma?
I meant there's the kneading of it. There's the putting into the oven.
Right.
Which ones you need?
Oh, so I forgot to say that that also in different bakeries is more or less human involvement, and which of those things has to be done, and how much of it has to be done lishma is very up in the air. Not everybody does the same things. Some people have more or less that the Mashgiach is doing, or that the Shomer Shabbos is doing. Some people have only Shomer Shabbos. Some people have, no, they have Shomer Shabbos and Goyim, and the Shomer Shabbos have certain jobs. So again, it's differentiates between one and the other, is that how much of that is lishma. Okay. The last thing is, this is not so much for a hand, for machine, but it ends up being machine, which is, the Mechaber says that you could use, for the mitzvah, you could use any of the five grains. The five primary grains that you make things out of could be used for the matzah. And he even says someplace else that you can use whole wheat or regular flour. That's all fine. The Mishnah Berurah understands, as do most. I'm sorry, I missed something. The Ramah says that the minig is to only use wheat. The minig is to not use the other grains. Even though the din is at its kosher, the minig is to use only the wheat. And the Mishnah Berurah and most understand that the reason why the minig is to only use wheat is because most people prefer the taste of wheat matzah over, let's say, spelt matzah, and therefore it's a hiddur of the mitzvah to do with the finer matzah rather than the less desirable matzah. What that means is that if a person likes the other matzah, or he's allergic to the other matzah, to the wheat matzah, or if it's the rest of Pesach, there's no reason not to eat those other matzahs. There's nothing wrong with them per se, just if you have a choice at the Seder. Should I eat a spelt matzah, or should I eat a wheat matzah? Wheat, most people prefer better, and you should eat that better. If you don't like it better, or you're sitting on the third day of Pesach and you want to eat it, there's no problem with eating it. The Marsham, on the Aruch HaShem, on Shulchan Aruch, says that no, he means something else. The Rambam means something else also. He means is that the Gemara says there's different ways, different grains become chametz at different speeds. They're not all equal to each other. It doesn't have exactly equal. He says, so in those days, they knew how to make from all five grains. We have lost the art and the knowing of how to make rye matzahs. We're only used to making wheat matzahs. We have no practice in making other kinds of matzahs. So the main one, the Rambam says, the meaning is, to not use things that are not wheat, he meant is because we don't know how to do them. We don't know how to make them right. It has nothing to do with the Seder. It has to do with Pesach in general. You shouldn't be eating a spelt matzah because, or the minhag would be to not eat the spelt matzah because how do you know you made it in a way that didn't come chametz? So Dain Weiss therefore says that a person should, unless they're stuck, he should not be eating oat matzah. That's what he's talking about over there. Now, in the tshuva is a lot stronger than what he really meant, because the people who made the oat matzah, who he wrote the tshuva to, spoke to him afterwards, and he said, I didn't mean to say that you mamash can't eat it. It means unless you have a special reason, you shouldn't be eating it. And so that's ashita. I can't say it's not ashita. I have to just remind you, within this marsham, that he's saying it, he's using it to explain the Ramah, and the Ramah doesn't say it's ashita to eat it, he just says the minig is to eat it. Okay? So it's at most, that's what it is. One pshat in the Ramah's minig. But that would be negeya. It's more for machines than it is for hand matzah. Hand matzahs tend to just be wheat. There are hand matzahs that come in other varieties also. They tend to be made out of wheat. But machine matzahs come in quite a more variety. Okay. Anyhow, so just to summarize what we said, in very short, which is, there's a number of issues that could differentiate one machine matzah from another. By and large, the issues that we talked about are more specific to machine matzah than to hand matzah. In just about every one of these things, a hand matzah does a better job than a machine matzah do. But within a person picking a machine matzah, if they're eating a machine matzah, then it's worthwhile to understand this one has an advantage over that one and say, if I think that this is a more important hiddur to have, they may all be kosher, but a person, one may be more important than the next.